This is CliffCentral.com. Welcome to the Renegade Report. I'm Jonathan.
And Ramon is barely here. Am I word?
Yeah, I think you've had a couple of hours sleep and I've had like zero. So between the two of us, we're really geared to go.
Yes, so this will be a very exciting one. Unfortunately, there was an issue with studio time and then the guest times didn't coincide. So Wandile will be coming back
sooner or later. He said he will come back and we're looking at some dates in the near future. They're both within the next 2 weeks. So within the next 2 to 3 podcasts, Wandile will be here. And we know we had promised you him to give us some insight on agriculture and our economy.
Yeah, but unfortunately last night things changed dramatically.
Yeah, things just studio time just fell apart. Yeah.
So, But yeah, you got the both of us in a very almost hungover-ish mood, even though I don't drink. So, yes, so welcome to the show. First of all, I don't want to talk about muscled men kneeling on a stadium or in a stadium, rather.
You don't.
Protesting against the president, who also said something stupid in, you know, to enact this reaction. Like, I don't care at all. So if you're into football, I mean, sports should be abolished. We all know that. And especially American football.
Then we can just go back to killing each other.
Yeah, it's rugby for pansies anyway, so why bother?
Yeah, but it's not really the point about the football, because now they're going to start kneeling at, you know, soccer games and basketball, and it's just going to spread. And then we've got people I saw this morning that has been show, the X-Files. It was actually a has been show when they made it in the first place. But they're also kneeling, both the stars for that.
But kneeling to who? To Donald Trump?
I mean, hilarious, as someone pointed out, is that what you've now got is a situation whereby resistance to Donald Trump is literally kneeling before him. Which is weird. It's kind of like kind of odd. I think we agree on the principle. You hate sport. You think whatever. You couldn't care about any of it. But I think I don't even know why he went there. I'm not quite sure. I get what happened. He was at one of these rallies he goes to, and then he kind of goes, "What will rile this crowd up? You know, what will really get these people going?" And he picks on something, and obviously he was somewhere where he thought, well, if I mention American football, you know, these people will really like American football, and they probably don't dig a guy like Colin Kaepernick, who did the kneeling first.
All right, but I mean, do we really care? Not really.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, in this case, I think it is a bit of 4D chess on Trump's part. He wins at the end of the day. I think he was dumb in a way, but he gets a whole bunch of people to freak out, lose their minds, become unpatriotic in a deeply patriotic country, and he looks like the patriot, and anyone who goes against him looks like they're not patriotic, and a whole bunch of people who otherwise weren't supporters might go, well, he's a dick, but at least he's patriotic.
No, well, I think he just really wanted to nuke North Korea yesterday and thought, what can I do to distract the masses? Well, not yesterday, Sunday, whenever it was.
So is North Korea gone? So, we just don't know it yet.
Yes, so we'll be arguing about who's kneeling where when the missiles from North Korea reach Hawaii. That'll be great, won't it?
Well, yeah. So that's a very good point. It's all the discussion about stuff that doesn't fucking matter.
Well, as Mark Stein, who is a great author, by the way, and you should read his books, he once said, you know, we will be arguing whether, you know, genderism is real when the imams from Saudi Arabia send their nukes over to New York City and bomb the shit out of us. This is the decadence of the Western society. We care about the minutiae, the narcissism of small differences, instead of just focusing on the macro political outcomes,
the bigger issues
of the decisions we make. And he's really true. Same as in South Africa, right? We care about the minutiae. What color are you, and are you allowed to say X, Y, and Z? Well, fucking Zuma has been taking hundreds of billions of rands out of the country.
Yeah, let's talk about South Africa for a bit, because what do you think of this? I spent a weekend a couple of weeks back having I got, I think, 6 death threats and a few hundred tweets telling me I was racist and all the rest of it.
Why did you shit on?
I shat on Tumi Sol, whose singular claim to fame in life, and I stand to be corrected, but singular claim to fame in life seems to be that he started this hashtag country duty, which is essentially his personal mob, because it seemingly starts out of a good will where he goes, oh, something bad's happened here, i.e. the Guptas. Guptas are bad, hashtag country duty. And everyone goes, oh, yeah, we agree with that. And then, unfortunately what happens is every time there's something he doesn't like or he thinks is bad, he goes hashtag country duty.
Right.
The fact that nobody can spot the vigilantism in this and the danger of where this could go is a problem. So I just pointed out the hypocrisy and the
you did not point it out, nature. Jonathan. You called him a disgusting human being.
No, I think I called him wrong. I called him a despicable human being.
Same thing.
After he responded in kind. So,
whatever the case.
Look, I know you want me to be, Ramon wants me to be very charitable to all human beings. I recognize my enemies and I will crush them given the opportunity.
Tumi Sol, or whatever his name is, he's not an enemy. He's just another person.
You know, Ramon,
wants to create a brand
Ramon, he's
around
not
himself.
An enemy until he goes, I heard Ramon Kabanak is a pedophile and he molested this child, posts a picture of some kid and goes, hashtag country duty. And 30,000 people descend on you. So the thing is, he's not your enemy until he does that to you. And I recognize the danger of someone like that. The power he wields, which he's been given by sort of some social media mob, which is very, very dangerous. And you know, we see it now with KPMG. So KPMG has lost a whole bunch of clients. Potentially they deserve to. That may be the free market at work and all the rest of it. But certainly there's some influence coming from social media and from other sectors. And at the end of the day, we've got this imbalance again where we've got a corrupt relationship, and actually the people who started the corrupt relationship, fed the corrupt relationship, are the people who are left alone, because once again, they're agendas. So as it happens, this country duty thing seems to be half the Save SA crowd, who are actually just ANC in sheep's clothing. Yeah. The other half are EFF, which are also basically just ANC in sheep's clothing.
Well, my biggest problem with country duty is that it's patriotic. Patriotism is really awful in every single aspect of the way. We don't deserve... Here's the thing that people might be uncomfortable with. The people we elect represents a large proportion of the people we have in the country. Mm. Zuma doesn't get power by just being who he is. People supported him all the way through, and they voted for him twice.
Yeah,
despite everything
that happened.
And then now, the same people who voted for him turn around and say, "Oh, we had no idea that he was this bad." No, yes, you did. The only difference between now and then was that the Guptas came and took state capture away from you. If you look at the 2007 policy documents, the communists and the Cossati was like radical economic transformation for all. We are going to use the state to enforce these very left-wing economic policies, land redistribution, etc.
Sure.
So they want to capture the state and then impose a communist or socialist.
And Jacob Zuma had shown himself to be a relatively amoral individual.
At the time,
long
yes.
before he was even the deputy president.
Yeah, and then what they didn't understand, or what they didn't know at the time, how greedy the bastard was. Like, Zuma is like exceptionally greedy.
Mm.
And that's something I like about him, ironically enough, because he's greedy, but he's not an ideologue.
Okay, but let me ask you this.
Yes.
So patriotism is bad. I'm not convinced of that entirely. But how do you propose don't tell me you get rid of the government. How do you stop patriotism then? In a state like South Africa we currently have set up, in the way we have set up, how would you propose you make people unpatriotic?
But what is it to be what is patriotism? It's the notion that because we're all together on this piece of dirt called South Africa, based on these social constructed borders,
it's a notion that
a piece of paper called the Constitution, somehow we all alike. bullshit.
No, I don't think it's that we're all alike. It's that it's not even a similar value. There's a common, not even cause, but there's something common between us.
Yes.
Right? Accidents we're all South Africans, history. Right?
Accidents of
sure,
history.
Sure, but humans can't get away from this. So you might be right. Patriotism may be a bad thing. I think nationalism is more of an issue than patriotism.
Can't tell the difference.
I think there is a difference, but humans don't get away from it. I mean, the Romans were patriotic to the Roman Empire. The Babylonians were the same story.
Yeah, and look at them, thriving metropolises now, aren't they?
Indeed. You think because of their patriotism or nationalism?
No, it's a silly idea. There's nothing, Jonathan, there's nothing that between you and I, just because we live in the same area, doesn't make us the same or think we have the same values or see the world in the same way. Now, transplant that idea to 55 or whatever it is, million people across the country. People will support those who are like them.
Yeah,
who believe the same as them, and who are the same race, ethnic, cultural group as them. Although, that's why AfriForum is so popular, right? Afrikaners band together, they've got a collective.
Okay.
And they just do what they need to do.
If AfriForum, so let's use that example. If AfriForum were to get their own country, and all those people who support AfriForum lived in that country, you see how patriotism might be useful then?
Oh, they will be very patriotic.
And that's why, I mean, the United States, which definitely has an identity crisis currently, but the United States previously was a it's a very patriotic country. If you visit the United States,
still is, yes.
I mean, even it doesn't matter whether it's a red state or a blue state and who they voted for. Frankly, there are flags everywhere. It's a standard thing to have a flag on
in North Korea as well, I think.
On your balcony, perhaps. It's very different to, I think that's an unfair comparison, but some countries through their patriotism, through people going, okay, well, we do live on this piece of dirt, accident or no accident, and we would like this piece of dirt to succeed in some particular way, so we're going to push in a certain area so that we're all going to push in that certain area so that the piece of dirt succeeds. And in turn, we all succeed.
Sure. I mean, if you have the correct values and ideas in place. I mean, if you're an American constitutionalist and you think the American Constitution is the greatest document the world's ever known,
mm-hmm.
I can accept that. But you appreciate the values and the principles of the Constitution, and that's what makes America great.
Mm.
That's fine. If you agree to the core principles of living,
sure,
that's great. But it's not America. It's the principles of how people live. And those can be transplanted anyway, right? I don't see like radical nationalist Swiss people for some reason, even though they've got the best political system in the world's ever known, the Canton system. But you don't see like a radical patriotic Switzerland. No, they just get together, eat chocolate,
well, they do.
Steal
they
the
do
Jews'
get
money.
Quite wild at soccer tournaments. All right, Have we killed that? Have we exhausted
right.
that?
Right. I'm going to talk about Makhosi Khoza, actually. So she resigned from the ANC. So take that, Derek Hanekom, for all your, you know, spitting fire from the sidelines.
I couldn't give a fuck, actually.
Here's someone who actually took the plunge. I don't care about Makhosi Khoza, as you well know. And I know you don't like her either.
I don't like her or Derek Hanekom.
No,
any of these Johnny come lately, the ANC so bad, but I've earned millions for years off it.
Sure. That's fine. I don't like them either.
Yeah.
But an interesting proposition from a friend of mine is that if she can co-opt the old, whatever you call them, the stalwart of the ANC, the Pravin Gordhans, the Trevor Manuels, maybe Thuli, because she's a Marxist at heart,
yeah,
Thuli Madonsela.
Absolutely.
Maybe get a few young DA people, ex-DA, Mazibuko, get people to buy into the idea that we are forming the old new ANC.
Hmm.
We have the same history, same colors.
Well, she could even get Musi, because Musi was in that TV ad where he said Thabo Mbeki's ANC was the great ANC.
Oh, fuck's sake, Musi.
But since Jacob Zuma's, where's it gone down? So if they could just re-emulate that.
But here's the thing. Yeah, maybe get Musi in. Okay, right. They run as the ANC, the real, you know, hashtag real ANC. Zuma is like a disturbing faction of the ANC that we are excising from this glorious movement of ours, right? Imagine that happens in 2019.
Yeah.
And they become the official opposition. Where does that leave the DA? In the mud. DA are going to be less than 10% of the vote, I would suggest. And it just shows the stupidity of DA policy.
Yeah,
because by following the ANC, the ANC's tail coats all the time and just implementing it better. They have no identity of their own.
Yeah, look, I agree with that. Look, I'd go a step further. I don't think anything that actually happens in our politics isn't very well thought out, part of a larger strategy, which is often spotted much, much later. You know, there's those of us who before Julius even left the ANC, before he was thrown out by Derek Hanekom, said he's going to get chucked. Then he will start something else. He will make a success of some sort of that. He will drop the ANC below their 50%, and then he will go back. And before going back, he will get a top six position, right, and ultimately become president. Now, that's a standard strategy that is seen as you know, the way that's what's probably going to happen. And he'll, you know, then the argument is how he'll shift the politics of the ANC left. I mean, Julius doesn't give a shit about politics or policies. He has no principles. The man cares about power. That's simple as that.
Yeah.
True. I think that what you're saying is entirely possible, but I think it's part of a greater strategy. So you, if you're the ANC, you do exactly that. You even want this to happen. So you might have even coordinated with Makhosi Khoza, who, by the way, came out of nowhere, previously had an opportunity, I think twice or three times, to get rid of Jacob Zuma, to vote on her conscience or with her conscience, and didn't. You get together and you go, look, listen, this is how we're going to play it. You're going to be the bad girl, okay? We're going to really say some nasty things about you. Zizi Kodwa is going to stand up and be a miserable little git. And then what's going to happen? You're going to start a party. You're going to go against us, exactly as you're saying. You're going to run against us. We're going to end up with 45%. You're going to end up with 15%. The DA is going to wallow with like 8%. And then we're going to join back together and we're going to have 60% again. And if you get it really right, we're going to have 66%, and then we can really do what we want to do. I wonder though, do you think the ANC really wants 66%? Like, you know how, like, when they had the 66%, they didn't change the constitution. And a lot of people are, like, pissed about that. And I think that they never ever really want 66% again, because they always want the excuse.
Sure.
To say, we weren't able to change the constitution. Because I do think I know for a fact there's a large number of moderates within the ANC.
Absolutely.
Who even if they believe in sort of socialist communist projects, know the damage that would be done if they changed sort of land policy overnight in the constitution.
But I think we need to distinguish between the ANC and the Communist Party.
Yeah.
The Communist Party is the one that runs on
those principles of
land redistribution, nationalization, and the trade unions do that as well.
Mm.
And they are somehow in Cyril's camp, the biggest crony this country has known.
Except Cyril, you know, as you posted, Cyril is a former trade unionist.
Well, the leader,
I mean, we mustn't forget these sort of relationships, personal relationships.
Let me just carry on. Sorry.
Sure, sorry.
Yeah. So we need to distinguish between the ANC and the extreme left within them, the tripartite alliance, which Zuma is breaking apart, and I will forever be thankful to him for doing so. So the communists were always the ones that infused this notion of radical economic transformation throughout the history. If you look at the South African Communist Party manifestos from you, I mean, the Freedom Charter was written by communist Jews like you. Right. Not like you.
Of course. It's completely like me.
Right. Land for all, freedom for all, et cetera, nonsense. Okay. The ANC itself pays a lot of lip service to that sort of nonsense. Right. And then it uses those principles and those policies, but it needs to deflect from the issues at hand. Right. So we are all poor because white monopoly capital has everything. White monopoly capital funds the ANC and has been doing so for 30 years.
Mm.
When Cyril, when Cyril was making the point in 1989, I think, he said, we're going to use the frog in the hot water analogy for white people. We're going to just impose taxes on them. We're going to make life more expensive for them.
Yeah.
And it's going to become unbearable and they're going to leave the country. That's what we want. While he was saying that, Anglo-American came to him and said, listen, why don't you become a board member? We'll give you a percentage of the company. And he made hundreds of millions of rands overnight.
Mm.
So WMC created cronyism in this country. with a willing recipient, don't get me wrong. From the Nats, they had that, and then they switched, they made a huge switcheroo, and went to the ANC in the late 80s, and often early 80s too, when they saw the tide was turning against them. So to think that big business is somehow independent of the government is a complete fallacy, first and foremost.
Well, I mean, you talk about Makosi Koza faction. She's not going to do that on her own. I mean, she doesn't have the means.
WMC is going to fund to the hilt, man. But, what are you talking about? They already probably got hundreds of millions of rands for
her. You know, a few of the big banks are going to get together, a couple of the insurance companies, and a few of the miners, and they'll throw tens or hundreds behind her, and she'll have a nice kitty to get going.
Absolutely. The only reason why WMC, I mean, it's colloquial, I'll just call them White Panobi Capital. The only reason why they're pissed with Zuma is because he doesn't actually answer their calls anymore. I mean, I know, massive CEOs that call Cyril on his, like, speed dial. Like, Cyril, what the fuck's happening? He's like, I don't know. Zuma doesn't tell me anything. Like, oh, shit. Okay, but what now? Okay, well, support me instead. Okay, fine. Like, that's it. Zuma doesn't need them to enrich himself.
Well, no, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
No, so, he just needs a state-owned enterprise.
And he's chosen... So that's an interesting point, because Zuma's chosen his masters as the Guptas instead of his masters
or
as...
Or is he the master?
As,
don't underestimate him.
Yeah, I'm not underestimating him, but all politicians are essentially subservient at some level to the people who give them. There's a weird sort of relationship. It's symbiotic but parasitic at the same time. So they give you money. You kind of owe them something, but you're the guy in power, so they kind of are at your behest. It's kind of this weird thing. So, but I'm saying he's made that relationship with the Guptas,
right,
instead of making that relationship with the so-called White Monopoly Capital, which is now not necessarily White Monopoly Capital, right, but it's the people who have money.
It should be called ex-ANC members Monopoly Capital. Sipho Phetshana and all those guys, they're all ex-ANC. Cyril Ramaphosa, ex-ANC. They're all part of Monopoly Capital since for like the past 30 years.
It's a Rainbow Nation Monopoly Capital. That's right. What it is. Rainbow it's, Monopoly
it's
Capital.
Fulfilled the vision of Mandela.
Wow. All right. We went straight there. Huh? Jeez. All right. Yeah. So
interesting times. But who do you support, though?
What, between the ANC?
Between Mini Zuma.
I still support Cyril.
Are you joking?
Yeah.
He's got the communists in his corner. What is wrong with you? Trade unions.
Who are you going to support?
Oh, Mini Zuma, straight.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Bring on the downfall, man. Bring on the demise of the ANC.
This is the problem with having this argument with an anarchist, right? Because you win either way. So if...
Not if Cyril comes in, because he's going to have the semblance of competence.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's going to have to deal with people who supported Zuma all the way through.
So here's the thing.
And it's going to be just shit. And people are going to be like, okay, let's give Cyril a bump in the 2019 elections. They're going to win 60%. And it's just going to be more... nonsense for another 5 years. Just bring Mini Zuma in, let her fuck it up completely, and then life will be great.
Yeah, I'm not convinced about the life will be great part. I think that's quite a leap in logic, but I know why you think that. Here's the thing. I've been kind of looking at it, and when we have one of our economists back in the studio, maybe Russ can ask it, and I saw Ronald asking seriously existential questions on the group, which we'll try to get to, but some of them are going to need brighter minds than mine. I just look at the country and I'm like, how is this place still going? Like, what is keeping us going? Because we've got a government that really does very little. I mean, you know, name a ministry and really tell me what they do. Like, they definitely get millions and millions of rands, sometimes tens of millions or even billions of rands in funding. But what do they really do? The health ministry does a little bit. You can actually identify what they do, but they do it relatively poorly, especially outside of major centers. The transport ministry does a little bit of roads here and there, but once again, outside of major centers, it's all falling to pieces. Yeah. So basically, what's keeping it together? And here's what's keeping it together. South Africa's got this weird kind of free market thing going on, right? So everyone's kind of just ignored the government, right? The government, they've gone, well, the government's fucked. It's done. And I think they did this more than a decade ago. They just went, well
the middle class, yes.
Yeah. And that we all kind of just do our own things. We just do our own interactions. We have our own economy going, almost separate from the government. Yes, they tax us and whatever, but it's like, it's almost like the country has geared itself, even at a high corporate level, to just do stuff with completely devoid of government, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is I would rather some sort of status quo on that continue, where we get Cyril in. And yes, it's not that I greatly trust Cyril, and it's not that I want Pravin Gordhan back in, or one of those communists back in the ministry. But I have to be honest, I think I would prefer someone like, I would prefer that status quo, and I would prefer to have Cyril, I would prefer to have Pravin back than our current situation with Gigaba.
No way, Gigaba's far superior. Did you see the economy grow 2.5% since Pravin was fired?
Yeah, thanks to our farmers, man. Fuck you.
Hey, people use it for Pravin all the time when he was in power. I'm going to use it for Gigaba.
No, I know, you're right.
But here's the thing, though, Jonathan. Why wouldn't you want Zuma in? Because assuming Mini Zuma is a proxy for Big Zuma, we just call him Jacob, what stops Jacob from being the right-wing authoritarian dictator that will focus on growth? He's chucked out the commies from his cabinet.
You know what I think?
He's chucked out the trade unions.
Yeah.
And he's ruthless enough to go through with that.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
Here's the thing.
Well, he could be ruthless
He may be ruthless as an individual. I don't know if any of you have, like, looked at the police and the military lately. Like,
they don't exist.
Authoritarian states need quite strong police and military units. And it's not just from a thing of, oh, well, they're well equipped. It's actually, they need to be relatively well trained. They need to be quite disciplined and organized. These are not organizations that are letting, you know, strippers into prisons, or that are having guns stolen off them at knife point. That actually happened.
I did see that.
These are not people who are like going to foreign countries and dying in battles that they shouldn't be dying in, because their strategy is poor. The thing is, I'm not saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying he couldn't, as commander in chief or whatever he would be called of our military, he couldn't tell them, listen, I want you to lock down Johannesburg and fucking shoot anyone who moves after 8 o'clock at night. I just don't think there's that level of competence. I mean, the truth is, you look at these authoritarian states, and their militaries are highly disciplined and highly competent.
And the civil service as well.
Yeah. So could he swing to the right? Sure. But I think we are a banana republic in a government sense. We just haven't got there in any other sense, because the rest of society has gone, okay, it's like government's the child playing in the corner, and we've all gone, okay, you go play in the corner, enjoy. Right, and government's there in the corner pissing on itself, and everyone else is getting on with it.
Well, pissing on itself with our money. I mean, don't act like it's easy.
No, sure, we've like factored that in as a consequence of living here.
That's an opportunity cost.
Yeah, absolutely. You live in South Africa, you've got to give the government a whole bunch of money they're going to steal, and you're never going to get any value for that. But you get the value of being in South Africa, and then there's all this other like economy that happens, and you know, the society that goes on away from all of this nonsense.
Sure. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I still think Zuma is the best option. Don't dismiss Willie Mkhize, though. That guy is the treasurer general of the ANC at the moment. He's also running. Arguably, some are saying he wants to split KZN for Zuma.
Yeah, I think they're all doing that. I mean, Jeffrey Debbie as well. He has no actual ambitions. I mean, other than sexting people, but he has no actual ambitions. I think a lot of them are like, well, if I stand, then I'll take a little bit away from Cyril, perhaps.
That's the point.
Zuma gets
And second of all, Cyril was at a game auction rather, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Jonathan, if you were running to be president of the country, or of the largest political organization in Africa, and president of a country, would you go to a game farm auction during the middle of the election cycle?
Yeah.
It's four months before the election takes place?
And I especially wouldn't if the single greatest controversy that has followed me, well, two, one is Marikana, and the other one is at the time of Marikana, when they were debating whether to pay the miners their 12 grand a month, he went and bought like a 14 million rand buffalo.
What does that tell you about Cyril? Do you think even Cyril knows he has no chance of winning.
You know, so it's either he knows he has no chance or he actually doesn't care. I mean, that's the other nice idea of him potentially being president, right? Is he has way less incentive to steal.
Yeah, but the stealing's not for him.
No, sure.
For his supporters. That's the one thing. It's not just self-enrichment. It's enrichment of everyone.
Yeah, but
that's the key.
But Cyril would have enriched a lot of his family already over the years through his, you know, he has a company because you're black deals.
Yeah.
It's difficult to say. We're really asking ourselves to pick it's the lesser of two evils argument.
And it's Zuma in this case.
All right.
Because he's greedy, but he's not an ideologue. And Cyril has no backbone, but he's got the communists on his side, and they will just take over his policy plans. Oh, they will.
Maybe. Maybe I would still back Cyril, but let's see what happens. I think it doesn't matter because I think your side's going to win.
My side.
Well,
the side you would support in
preference.
I actually want to ask you a pertinent question. I spoke with someone over the weekend about being a liberal in Africa.
Mm.
And he said it is the most stupid position one could think of having in Africa. And his argument was along the lines of, when there's a general tendency to become authoritarian, liberals will always support authoritarianism de facto.
Why?
Because people aren't liberal at all in Africa. There's no major liberal. Liberal, I'm talking about classically liberal, right?
Yeah, sure.
Like you, which is actually a soft socialist to me, but we can't biggest common choosers in this case.
Underhanded. That's like.
But what is your opinion on that? I actually found the argument quite compelling because, for example, if you are the DA, right, and you are a liberal, so-called liberal party, and Helen's going to say, but not as liberal as people say they are, but they try to have liberal policies and prescriptions. They're not getting anywhere because of the liberal. They're winning support because they're good at implementing policy and keeping litter off the roads. But they're not doing that because they're liberal, right? They're not being supported.
But liberalism isn't something that. So this is the problem with liberalism is that it's not something that almost proselytizes, right?
Right.
So communism does, socialism does, nationalism does. All of these things sort of proselytize. They have to convince their followers of what they are. The followers buy in, and then they vote accordingly. The DA, if it was truly liberal, which it isn't, it certainly isn't anymore, and it's very worrying to see some of the members of that organization and their views on certain things, and senior people in parliament, spokespeople, etc., etc. But the whole point is liberalism is something that people come to themselves because you just let them have freedom. That's the whole idea.
Yes, I know, but they. Yes, of course, you let them have freedom, but people are bastards with their freedom. I mean, that's why I'm for free speech, because I have no inclination to believe that if you give people freedom to speak, that they will be kind to one another. They're going to be bastards to one another. But the way to deal with that is not to padlock their lips and tell them to be silent.
Yeah, absolutely.
The point is
but why
for
would...
them to express themselves, and we just. Can
we can see them being stupid or saying silly things and then we know where they stand on
exactly.
particular topics. But why would if you give people freedom and then they can act as the individuals they want to be, right? Which immediately makes them liberals, whether they believe they're liberals or not. The minute you follow your life the way you want to be and you don't fuck with other people in the way they want to be, you're a liberal. You may not realize that you're a liberal, but that makes you a liberal.
No, I think you have to know that you're a liberal. I mean, liberalism only comes about, or freedom only comes about, if you look at the other countries that are defined as liberal, America or Australia.
I had a discussion with someone this weekend who was talking about Andrew Breitbart's book in which he refers to people and referred to himself originally as a default liberal.
Right.
And many people occupy that position. So they don't, because most people are not involved in any kind of political space. So they don't know that they follow any one particular route. You could even find people who like Bernie Sanders or something he sells, you know, or like the ANC and what they sell, which is socialism. It's just packaged socialism, and they wouldn't say I'm a socialist because they have no idea what socialism is. We know this. We know this when the accusation gets made of XYZ is socialism, and I even, you know, as I recall repeatedly on the show, was brought down on that and said, if it's not means of production, then it's not socialism, right? So, the thing is that many people sit in default positions. They don't realize that they're in those default positions, and that because they may never get politically engaged or involved. But that doesn't mean they don't have fundamental belief that put them in those kinds of boxes in a way.
Yeah, no, I think that as a liberal and as a known liberal, if you actually have done the work and you've done the research into the ideas themselves and you identify as a liberal, I think you'll inevitably end up being a victim of greater ethnic and cultural forces, and you'll end up supporting, or not supporting, but you'll end up living within an authoritarian regime.
So how does that, I mean, the person you were discussing this with applied it to Africa, but there are, I mean, the United States is, whether they like it or not, they're classically liberal. That entire country lives classically liberally.
They have 280 years of history.
Okay.
From the smallest government the world's ever known,
but they
to one
never
of the
went,
largest.
But they never went authoritarian. They're still not authoritarian.
Well, they did. Abraham Lincoln was a very big authoritarian. He centralized the states of America together. Slavery came after, you know, slavery was a secondary thing at the time, but he
wanted more central government control.
Theodore Roosevelt interned Japanese Americans. No, they're very authoritarian when it suits them. The drug war, authoritarian.
Yeah, so there's individual examples, but the average American lives their lives in a very classically liberal way.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know every American.
Well, there's general freedom.
Well,
in they've
that got
country,
the principles
right?
of freedom, I mean, they, right? They've got the principles of freedom.
Use another country
enshrined in the Constitution, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
but in Africa, I don't know if we have that. We don't have that that history. We don't have those values. People just don't let other people just get away with living their lives, and we see it all the time with country duty, and we see it all the time with calling out, because people are not pure enough in their thoughts, right? Or they are the wrong race to say
so
X,
is,
Y, and Z.
Is the argument that in Africa a classically liberal view is not powerful enough, and is not?
Well, people don't believe it. That's the thing. People don't. They call themselves liberal as much as possible. Eusebius pontificates about being a liberal all the time. You speak to him, and you see what he says.
No, there's nothing liberal about Eusebius.
Right. But he calls himself a liberal, and if you speak to him and you listen to what he says, he would want, well, not want, but I think he thinks about reprocessing racists, right? Putting them in a camp over here and say, racism is bad for these reasons, and just changing the way they are hardwired to think about things.
Yeah, all right, but that's because he's incorrect on what liberalism is. That's not because liberalism is a problem.
No, but liberalism is not the problem, but liberals are the problem, because they're a bunch of fucking pansies. That's what I'm trying to say. I've been trying to say that for the past 2 years.
There you go. We finally got to the point. You just wanted to insult me, I guess.
Yes. No, liberals are pansies, because the basic premise of your argument is that people should be free, but people will use that freedom to subjugate you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, that can happen anywhere. In any single situation.
You can be a liberal in a lot of other countries, a lot of other continents.
Yes.
You can be a liberal in Europe. You can be a liberal in South Korea. You can be a liberal in Australia, in the US.
Sure.
Not in Venezuela, right? Yeah. Not in Nigeria.
Yeah, but you
not
could,
in South Africa.
You could be liberals in all these places, and it's not to say that there would never be an authoritarian regime, just because they are generally very liberal. But it is a cultural thing to an extent, in the way that people are raised in their values and their beliefs. And look, I mean, you're not wrong in saying that we have a view that we want to control others, right? I mean, that comes out very much in South African culture. We can't get away from this idea that if someone does something wrong, we have to control them so that they don't do something wrong.
Right. Arguably, the only real liberals we have in South Africa are like the English white people, in a way. And some of them, at least. Not the woke ones. But if you look at ethnic groups, strong cultural, traditional practices, Afrikaners, strong cultural religious practices, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. There's
an undercurrent of middle class black people as well who are quite liberal.
I don't know. I haven't asked them personally. I don't have any black friends. I'm not going to pull that card.
No, I'm not saying asking you to pull the black friend card, but I'm saying we know people who are friends of the show,
right?
Who?
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah. So you think it's just a very small minority, but essentially
I think people don't really care about political ideology. They're worried about food, jobs, education for the kids.
That's what I was saying.
But liberals are worried about that and freedom for everyone under these circumstances. But people will use it. But there's no hook for people to get together and be like, yeah, you know, we're liberals and we're going to fight for these principles.
I don't know. I've given my case. Arrested. Should we get to some comments from our group?
Right.
So, Vanis, I hope I've said that correctly. He wanted us to talk about the media as a tool for overthrowing a government, which he thinks is happening in America right now. I don't think it's happening at all in America.
I think the opposite happened. The more the media doubled down, the more popular Trump gets.
Yeah, can we just talk about the doubling down, tripling down thing? Sorry, as a side note to that, but it seems to me. Look, I'm happy with the left losing. I'm perfectly fine with them doing this, but they cannot just say something like, for example, Trump is bad. Trump's a bad president. That would be a fair statement. He may very well be a bad president.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it quite yet, but he's not fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or Trump did this. It was really stupid. Trump should really not call people son of a bitch. That's something a president probably shouldn't do. That was bad. They could just sort of say that, and then everyone would go, yeah, I agree with that. Even if I support Trump, I think he shouldn't call people that. That's a fair point. But instead of doing that, they go, you know what? We're not going to go with Trump is bad. We're going to go with Kim Jong-un would be better than Trump as our president.
Really?
I mean, well, Chelsea Handler. I mean, this is a mainstream comedian.
Yeah.
TV. Look, it doesn't matter. She's a mainstream person. She's got millions of followers on all the social media platforms.
Celebrities, Jonathan. Have you learned nothing from Hillary Clinton?
Well, the problem is I can bring up all the people who are, you know, CNN contributors as an example, and they say just as silly things. And they, instead of just saying the guy's bad, I had this argument with Twitter. Rich Mulholland thought I went a little bit too far with the guy, but the kneeling thing, some guy that I know who's a very intelligent guy, but has, my opinion, got Trump derangement syndrome, retweeted that an article in which it said the Steelers didn't come out from their change room to the anthem. Fine. As it happened, was completely incorrect because one of the guys did come out and he stood there. There was photographic evidence, whatever. Fine, he stood there. And as it happens, his teammates weren't in the change room. They were just behind him in the tunnel, but not like out of it, just in the shadow of it, right?
Okay.
So the article was completely false, incorrect.
Fake news, right. Yes.
Fake cool. news. Right. Retweeted millions of times by people because, well, thousands of times by people because, look, they all stayed in the change room, rah, rah. Fine. So I point out to the guy, look, it's incorrect. It's not what happened, right?
You did not say it's incorrect. You said that's not what happened. If you believe in this, it's fake news.
In those exact words, the original tweet was, this is incorrect. All right. So I actually went and looked now. You're right. It didn't happen quite this way, but they did stay inside the tunnel or something like that. Instead of like meeting me halfway, he goes, it is correct. And not only is it correct, and he just doubled down on it. And he kept doubling down. And I don't know when those who are, and it happens in South Africa too, right? So you can't say you don't like the Renegade report. You can't say You know, I don't agree with those guys. I think their views are incredibly incorrect. I think they're wrong, and these are the reasons, or I just think they're wrong. I think they're idiots. Whatever.
That's right.
But you see, you have to double down. You have to say, sure. You have to say, well, no, it's not that I disagree with them. It's that they're bigots.
That
they're alt-right.
Sure.
It's that they're racist. It's that, and the problem is that then what happens is someone comes and they listen to the show and they go, hold on a second. These guys don't sound like bigots. They have views. Some of their views sound a bit weird. You know, there's that anarchist guy and that classical liberal oak who thinks you can be a classical liberal in Africa. You know, they're a bit strange, but they're not any of those things. And then the problem is if you called us racist, misogynist, bigots, whatever, alt-right, and then you subsequently find that could be completely false, then we come out looking far better. And whoever said it looks terrible. And the same thing happens with Trump. The same thing happens with all kinds of people all across the world. We see this all the time.
So what is the principle here? I'm losing track.
No, I just was just mentioning on the doubling down. And that's what the media, the question was about the media originally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the media will ever get to a point where it's the catalyst for a revolution of sorts.
Well, I think what I'm saying is that they're the reverse.
So well, in this day and age.
So I'm saying
in some nations,
had the media from point – the starting point on Trump was reported that Trump announced his presidency and he called all Mexicans rapists. That was the starting point.
Sure.
That is what they reported. The reality is that Trump never did that.
But we know all that stuff.
Yeah. So the point is they started.
You defend Trump to a degree that I sometimes find very confusing.
They started doubling down.
Sure.
Right?
And they lost.
And so the doubling down has caused the reverse.
Sure.
It actually hasn't overthrown the government. It gave the opposite government that they wanted.
Sure. I mean, I just see the media in its current form, maybe not in South Africa, but perhaps some of it, as another element of sort of executive power. It's somebody is newspeak, try be promiscuous with what you read, get a different angle on the story. Don't take anything too hard or believe it to be true based on a headline or anything like that. It's like Sunday Times wrote a great piece about KPMG being terrible for writing this report about the rogue unit in SARS. I'm like, but you bastards publicized that and doubled down on that at the time. Very interesting.
All right. Should we, sure. Ronald has really like these questions are heavy, Ronald. And we'll have to look into them. Let's try this one. He wants to know what we think the source of the idea that the natural and spontaneous order either does not exist or is oppressive and socially constructed. This idea is used to promote transgenderism among children, speech policing, shifting towards command economies, rejecting rationalism and empiricism in actual science, and justify the idea that signing out of the Paris Accord caused hurricanes in the US, lesbianism as a culture, not just homosexuality, but the whole butch and feminine thing.
Okay, we get it. So, of rationality as being...
It's
called postmodernism, right?
Yeah, so
if you look at the tenets of postmodernism, it's about there are no core beliefs, there are no core truths about anything. So, which I'm sort of sympathetic to in some respects. Like, I think if you
watch our AfriForum interview if you want to see Romano or postmodern.
Yes, I think it can be pragmatic in some ways. I don't think it should be used for every single for history. For history, you can use it, because, you know, history is written by the victors. For identity, I think it's quite useful if people really do not like who they are or they come from an oppressive regime. They can just discard all that and be like, no, I am this person with these values and these characteristics. But what postmodernism has done, unfortunately, is taken over from the Enlightenment values.
Yeah.
The rationalism, the scientific inquiry, the doubt.
Just to add to this is it's blank slateism as well, which it comes from, I think, Steven Pinker's book.
It was a theory way before,
the blank slate. The essence that, you know, there's nothing – you just decide on who and what you are. There's no – pre-guiding principles.
It's the
biology doesn't matter.
It's the bastardization of Jacques Rousseau's Jean-Jacques Rousseau's premise was that we are born innocent and then our environment and society corrupts us.
Yeah.
Here it's just you are born innocent. That's it. There's no don't and society and history does corrupt you and is oppressive due to you being a female or a person of color or whatever the case might be. Whereas if you read the science, we are 50% genetics, 50% social influences. So those people who say equality of opportunity is so important, okay, take out the social influences, then you'll have a society based entirely on genetics. Do you really want that? No, you don't. So don't say equality of opportunity because it's basically eugenics.
We must have a separate discussion about equality of opportunity because I slightly disagree with you on that. But we don't have enough time for it now. Let's take one last comment from sure. from the group, and then we need to call it because between Ramon and I, we seriously are going to collapse. Well, we've already answered Simon's question to an extent. He wants to know the likelihood of SA becoming a collection of city-states. You think that that's probably very likely.
Not likely, but important.
Well, but you think it's likely as well based on France's...
It's likely, but I think it's paramount that it happens.
Do you think it's happening already a little bit? You know, you've got the DA kind of running Joburg and, you've got like different governments running certain cities and it's creating a clear sort of disconnect between national or even provincial governance and local governance. So it's kind of taking place already.
Well, Steyn City is an example of that, an enclave independent city from the rest of us, right?
Yeah, I suppose. And then he also asked, why is the right more hesitant to play the long game than the left? Using the recent healthcare bill in the US as an example, as it certainly moves them away from centralization. Yet you had people like Rand Paul, who I agree with on principle, being short-sighted in their view. If Mashaba were to ever become president, this is a separate question. Why is the right not play the long game? I'm not sure that they don't play the long game. I think both are playing quite the short game. In my opinion,
happens is the left imposes a legislation, right? And then the Republicans hate the legislation, but their constituents hate the legislation, but they use it all the time. So if you speak about Obamacare to Republicans voters, they're like, oh, Obamacare is a communist socialistic thing. And then you talk about the Affordable Care Act, they say, oh, yeah, since that came in, I've been, you know, it's been saving me lots of money and I've been. It's assisted in giving me medicine that I didn't have before. Mm. And you say, okay, the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. What?
Yeah.
So they take advantage of it. And the principled right-wingers like Rand Paul always gets cut short because he's based on principle. Others are all based on what is popular. And the popular thing to do is to adopt the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And the Republican constituents are like, no, I actually like it, even though I disagree with it in principle.
Yeah. All right. Well, all I wanted to say on that was that I don't think either are playing necessarily a long or a short game. The left has been winning for a long time in many areas, so it looks like they've been playing a long game. The right is reactionary in many ways to what the left proposes, and that's the kind of relationship you have. Last thing. I know we need to cut it, but I haven't seen the museum in Cape Town, the new museum in Cape Town that Russ posted on the group about. Any comments about modern art?
What is the difference between modern art and vandalism? And with that, I'm out of here.
Ramon is out. I'm not a big fan either. If it looks like a three-year-old could do it, they probably could. It's not art. You can find us on Facebook, Renegade Report Group, and also the Renegade Report page on Twitter @Renegade_Report. Ramon, as always, @RomanKabanak on Twitter, myself @Jonathan_Witt, and the Twitter page is @Renegade_Report. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, you can donate on Patreon. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.